Supreme Court of the State of South Dakota, the Honorable Chief Justice Stephen R. Jensen presiding, is now in session.
Seated. Thank you. Good morning. The first case on the docket is in the matter of reinstatement of Kenneth Orrick. We have this is on a petition for reinstatement filed by Mr. Orrick. Mr. Orrick is here in the courtroom with his attorney, James Schwartz, and Tom Freeberg is here on behalf of the disciplinary board for the State Bar of South Dakota. We've set this hearing for 15 minutes for each side and then an additional rebuttal. Mr. Orrick has the burden in this case, and so my question is, Mr. Orrick intending to speak this morning?
Yes, Your Honor. I'll be giving a brief opening, then I'll turn it over to Mr. Orrick. I think he has some prepared statements.
Sounds good. If you want to proceed, Mr. Schwartz, then.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. I first want to take this opportunity to thank the disciplinary board. I want to thank Mr. Tom Freeberg and Mr. Bob Freeberg and the entire disciplinary board. I have, at the hearing with Mr. Orrick, I sat for 5+ hours with some of the best attorneys in the state, and I really appreciate the time and the work that everybody put into it. I know that there was multiple hours even before we got to the hearing, but I really appreciate that. I have a couple remarks, and then I'll turn it over to Mr. Orrick. Now, before the hearing at the disciplinary board, I did very little witness preparation, and you can kind of see that through the some of the testimony, particularly Ms. Mills. And the reason why I did that is because I didn't want to filter their testimony as to what they knew of Mr. Orrick and what he had done. I wanted the board to have an unfiltered view of Mr. Orrick and everything that he had accomplished since his conviction. And as I sat there with the witnesses and before, I kept thinking of Bob Orrick and just let it fly. And what you have before you is you have a record before the board, unscripted, but we heard testimony about Christmas with Jamaican nurses who were far away from home, but the Orrick's took them in. We had testimony from a veteran and Mr. Orrick's work with veterans. We had testimony from a Red Mass during the bar convention, which Mr. Orrick had helped. And I think that when we go through it, I think it was more of a story of resilience, that he was down. He had been abandoned by many people in our profession, by many veterans who he had called friends, and yet he kept getting up every day and kept moving forward. And so this story of resilience that we had at the disciplinary board, it didn't come without tears. There were tears shed that day. But what you're left with is a man who could very easily have taken the easy way out and not appeared before you today. He didn't have to appear before the disciplinary board. But what he showed was that even at his lowest moments, he could be humble, that he could learn from his mistakes, and that he could carry himself with honor, with the understanding that he needed to make amends for what he did. Now, the crime that he was convicted of was not related to his practice of law. It was related to a securities firm, and it was a tax crime. Now, I'm going to turn this over to Mr. Orrick. And the problem that I have is that I'm turning it over to Mr. Orrick. I know that he needs to be contrite, and he needs to be humble before you. And so there's that balance between that contriteness and the humbleness, but also to show you the confidence that he has, that really at the end of the day he should be proud of where he is today, because it's a long way from where he was. And so At the disciplinary board, I was proud to represent Mr. O'Rourke. After the disciplinary board, I was more proud after the stories, the unscripted stories that I heard to represent Mr. O'Rourke. And as I stand before you today, I am proud to represent Mr. O'Rourke. The resilience and strength and humbleness and kindness that he has shown is those kind of values that we need in our bar and that I think we should reward. So with that, I would turn it over to Mr. O'Rourke.
Thank you, Mr. Sword. Mr. O'Rourke, you may approach the podium and make your statement at this time.
May it please the court, counsel, if I could have just a few moments for a little bit of a prepared statement. As newly minted attorney in 2008, I never thought my first appearance before this court would be for something like this. I'm ashamed of myself that it is. I'd like to start with once again apologizing to the courts and the members of the state bar for my conduct, especially to those justices that I practiced before and who mentored me in the law. My greatest failure was played out before you, and again, I'm ashamed. I have previously and do here again take full responsibility for my actions that led to my being charged and convicted for failure to collect or pay over payroll taxes. I'd just like to thank a few people briefly. First, my Lord and Savior and his church here on earth that gave me hope, never abandoned me in my darkest moments, and gave me the opportunity to use my talents for good during this very dark period of my life. My wife and children, who I hurt the most. My counsel, who never gave up on me and walked me through this, what is now, as of tomorrow, will be a year-long process. Attorney Becky Porter, who gave me hope throughout this. And finally, to the members of the disciplinary board, who pulled no punches in their five-hour examination of me, and that ensured that you have a record before you of which to judge me properly. I'm a much more humble person than I was when this began. My lack of humility was sinful and driven by my desire to succeed and be someone of prominence. I did everything asked of me in the criminal case. I never violated the conditions of my probation and was released 2 years early on a sua sponte motion of Judge Viken. I was a competent attorney, especially in the area of criminal law, and I will be if you allow me to serve again. My competency of attorney has never been, as an attorney has never been questioned in this, in spite of the poor decisions I made that led to my resignation from the bar. Prosecutors from both the Sixth and Seventh Circuit used to consult with me on a regular basis on tough cases, and in cases from homicides to drug conspiracies to complex sexual child abuse cases, I showed my competency over and over again. Finally, one of the collateral consequences of my actions was the loss of the majority of people in social circle who I considered friends. I've endured self-created ostracization from many members of the bar to the point where I've had attorneys turn around and walk away from me rather than have to speak to me. Dr. Samuel Johnson in the Oxford Dictionary National Biography calls arguably the most distinguished man of letters in England wrote, "Adversity is a state in which man most easily becomes acquainted with himself, being especially free from admirers." No truer words have ever been spoken. By my own actions, I was forced to conduct a thorough self-examination of myself and make changes. I only ask the court to please treat me with the same kindness that you've shown other attorneys similarly before you, and that you offer me an opportunity for redemption in the eyes of the bar, this court, and the public. Thank you, and I stand ready to answer any questions and address any concerns you have.
Thank you for appearing, Mr. O'Rourke. I have a couple questions. In looking back and in reading the submissions, it appears that there was a time when you became overwhelmed. What steps will you have in place to avoid that similar circumstance?
Thank you, Justice Kern. I created a support network that starts with Mr. Sword, who I'd be practicing with, Ms. Porter from Lawyers Assistance Program, who I will continue to meet with regularly, and which I met with at the end of last week. I also began to see, at her suggestion, a psychologist to help me better self-examine myself and determine what problems led up to this. And he's agreed to keep me on as a patient and make part of that support network. So I never practiced before with a partner. And I think having Mr. Sword, with his vast experience, business acumen, which is something I clearly lacked, and knowledge will help to serve as that safety net, Your Honor.
Do you need a mentor besides Mr. Sword in light of the fact that you'll be in close practice together? So in other words, someone that is not in a supervisorial role to contact?
Ms. Porter's offered to fulfill that role, but I'm open to anyone that's willing to mentor me and serve as a check and balance and a sounding board for me, because when I did get overwhelmed, I insulated myself. I shut off the outside world, I closed the door, and I made big mistakes.
As I understand it, Mr. Rock, the condition of reinstatement, one of them would involve you practicing within a discrete area of the law, criminal law, for instance, and that would be sort of the area that you would intend to practice within?
Yes, Justice.
Talk to me a little bit, or perhaps us, about competency. You know, the condition was that you take and pass the bar exam, and I noticed in your submissions that you suggested that continuing legal education in the amount of 40 hours or something along those lines would suffice in your view, and I'm just curious about your thoughts.
Absolutely. The questions that I was asked before the board, I don't think they quite distinguish the difference between competence and currentness. Their questions seem to revolve around a concern that over the period of time since my disbarment that I was no longer current. And I addressed that to them by stating that I had regularly reviewed all the Supreme Court decisions in South Dakota since that time. They asked why I hadn't taken any CLEs. Didn't know I was even able to take CLEs, but still don't know if I would have been. But I did take it upon myself to complete all the UJS CLEs that are online, all the Bar Association CLEs that are online, reviewed the videos from the State Bar for legislative updates for all the sessions since I stopped practicing, in an attempt to bring up that currentness. And I think that was the concern that the board was raising without separating it from competence, because there was no testimony and there's nothing in the record that indicates that I was not a competent attorney.
No, and I understand that. I've read it as well. I just wondered if maybe, and we'll hear from Mr. Freeberg, I wondered if that was just a consequence of the passage of time or that was something that was important to the board. I'm just, and you don't have to address that. I'm just curious.
There was one portion, and it was quite interesting in the bars. Hearing is Mr. Rasmussen was sitting for someone that had recused themselves, and when he was the last one to question me, when he asked that question, the entire rest of the board began laughing and saying he's trying to drum up business for himself. I'm sure that they had a serious reason for doing it, but that was the only time that was brought up during it, and Mr. Freeberg can certainly address that.
Mr. Orrick, I want to explore two areas with you. What's the status of your restitution?
Your Honor, I continue to make restitution in the amount on a monthly basis that Judge Viken ordered. I intended and I offered in my readmission practice plan for the period of conditional reinstatement to have Mr. Sword withhold a portion of my income and pay directly to the court. I believe that the D board found that, in their words, were a little onerous on me and Mr. Sword to do, and they did not make that recommendation. But I'm still perfectly willing to do that and anything necessary to satisfy that. I want it paid off as quickly as possible.
So you've been making regular monthly payments?
Yes.
And who do you make that to?
The clerk of courts in Sioux Falls. And I made my September payment yesterday, so I'd be able to tell you here that I'm completely current and caught up on it.
And do you know what the balance is?
It's around $200,000, Your Honor.
But the other area I want to explore with you is before the complaint that came up on, and I know you self-reported on this, that led to your ultimate disbarment, 10 years of practice, you had 7 complaints with the disciplinary board. And I know I've read the situation with the one complaint and the individual that filed those, and I know that was expunged, and I know there were a couple others expunged. But 7 complaints is a pretty high number in 10 years of practice. And 3 of those resulted in either private admonitions or I think there was one that I think resulted in a caution. One of those was Judd Skaggs. What did that involve?
That was a veterans law case, Your Honor, where Ms. Skaggs was attempting to get a widow's pension from the death of her husband. She was very elderly. We had some definite communication difficulties during the course of that representation. I was successfully able to get the death certificate changed and get a remand from the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims on her behalf. But it was a very long and slow process, and it was difficult with the communication with Ms. Skaggs.
So was the nature of her complaint procrastination or communication, or what was the nature of her complaint?
As I recall, Your Honor, it was a little bit of both, but mainly on the communication side.
And what about Nick Boser?
Nick Boser was a law enforcement officer that came to me wanting me to take care of him for a family law case. I told him I didn't have the time to do it. He insisted that he wanted me to do it. I took a retainer from him, and then after I hadn't completed it in 30 days, he made a complaint to the board. His retainer was returned to him, and we went on our way.
And then Dean Johnson, I think, resulted in a caution.
Dean Johnson was a contentious divorce with a large ranch property and cattle herd, and a very uncooperative and contemptuous client that I was representing.
He was your client or
Edwards? He was my client. In the end, his son sat him down and we worked out a settlement, and in reflection, he wasn't happy with the settlement afterwards.
This time's up. Any other questions from members of the court?
I just had one, Mr. Orrick, and this relates primarily to the recommended condition that is the one that you are asking us to consider a different alternative. And if the recommendation recommends that you limit your practice to criminal defense during the two-year period of supervision, I'm wondering if you and Mr. Sword have had conversations. Is it your intention to broaden the scope of that, assuming everything goes well with your, if we were to approve conditional admission in a two-year period of supervision, or have you talked or thought beyond that point about what you might aspire to do?
And you're asking after the end of the 2 years,
right?
Justice DeMaine. We have it to a great extent in Pennington County and the Seventh Circuit specifically. There's such a critical lack of attorneys doing criminal law right now and court appointments. Many of the court-appointed attorneys that I've been able to speak to in the last several months have just been overwhelmed. As a matter of fact, one told me last week he's stopping to take them because he can't. There were two attorneys that together made over, or built Pennington County over $500,000 last year in court appointments alone. So that's how critically short they are. So I'm really focused on that right now. That's the area that I feel most comfortable. However, Mr. Sword's got a much broader range of experience, and down the road, if he's going to mentor me and tailor me into those, I still would have him as a backstop. We plan to continue to practice together after the 2 years, and not just for a period of supervision. This is a long haul.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. O'Rourke.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice.
Mr. Freeberg, you can proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel, Mr. Orrick. We're here today to consider this reinstatement, and I want to share with you a little bit of the board's thought process and making the recommendations that they did to you. First, you know, as the statutes require, there's basically three prongs to consideration of reinstatement. The first being the moral and character portion that Mr. Orrick is required to prove to this court by clear and convincing evidence. The board was favorably impressed with Mr. Orrick's conduct post-conviction and post-sentencing. He was cooperative with the board in the first place in resigning from the bar, which resulted in the order of disbarment. But we thought it was important that when he did that, and he has testified before the board, that he didn't have a realization that he could come back to this court and seek readmission. So his conduct after his sentence and the conviction was not based to try and preface this court with showing that he's a good moral character. In fact, I think Mr. Sword, in his opening statement to the disciplinary board back in March, indicated that this whole process of reinstatement was his idea. He needed some assistance. He knew of Mr. Orrick. They were friends. And he's the one that suggested that either he come back to this court to seek permission to be a paralegal or legal assistant, at which point Mr. Orak discovered that he did indeed have the ability to seek readmission after his felony conviction.
Counsel, in the last 10 or 20 years, how many reinstatements are you familiar with? I've been trying to answer that question.
There's not been a lot, Justice. I know we've been up here, this is the third time, I guess, since I started working with the board, so every couple of years there's one. I know Mr. Smyrick was here and you were seeking readmission, and that was denied. Mr. Theophilus was here not very long ago and was granted readmission by this court on a conditional basis, and then now recently without restriction. It seemed like when I look back at the readmission cases, they were older, and there has not been a ton of them in the recent history, Justice. A couple of things about Mr. Orrick's conduct that the board was impressed with. Again, I think he mentioned his work with his church. He'd been very active in the Catholic Church, working with education and training and helping with the bishop with many of his duties. The board also considered the fact that Judge Viken released him from probation early. Not a common practice, and it was not upon Mr. Orrick's motion, but simply a request directly by Judge Viken that he be released. The other a couple of members of the board are more familiar than I am with the federal financial aspects, and they were inquisitive as to whether there was a payback plan that was set up by the federal court. And Mr. Orrick had indicated that only payback was the $1,000 monthly that was required during his probationary period that he has continued to pay since the time of his sentencing. Finally, with respect to his moral qualifications, the board was favorably impressed that he had sought out the assistance of lawyer assistants. Barr's guardian angel, Becky Porter, has been kind to assist Mr. Rock in preparing for readmission and advising him on things that he should be doing to make himself more competent and more capable to practice law should the board grant him his readmission. One of the things that he inquired about in the board had concerns about was the restitution. If you look at the board's recommendation and or findings in finding number 12, they were left with the impression that Mr. Orrock was on the verge of selling his security business and that upon that sale he would have full restitution made. That was his representation to the board, and when they made the recommendation that they did, they were of the understanding and belief that that restitution was imminently going to be paid in full. Obviously, that has not happened based on what Mr. Orrick has told you today. And when the board looked at the fact that this was a federal tax case with payroll taxes, it's not too dissimilar from a trust account. When anyone's responsible for the payment of those payroll taxes, they're holding that money in trust. And so there were some questions about that aspect of it with Mr. Orrock, and the board did have the concern that that is something that reflects upon someone's ability to hold funds in trust. One of the recommendations from the board was that he not have access to a trust account based upon his failure to comply with the trust that he was entrusted with those payroll taxes. When looking at the reinstatement cases, I thought that probably the most instructive one was from the Steve Peer case back in 1997. Mr. Peer had taken money from a client, had misrepresented that for several months about it, but ultimately came clean and was disbarred as a result of the taking of clients' funds. And Mr. Peer was required by the court when he sought readmission to be under the guidance of an experienced attorney in Yankton for 2 years. He was also required to take the bar exam, including the professional responsibility portion. The only distinction I would note is that he was a diploma privilege graduate and did not have to take the bar exam when he first was admitted to practice in the state of South Dakota. One of the reasons that the board also recommended the bar exam was that Mr. Orrock's practice was very limited. If he's granted an unconditional admission back into the practice of law, there's no restrictions on the areas that he can practice. The board felt that based upon the limited practice that he engaged in his years of practice, which was in criminal law, it would be important to make sure that he is well qualified legally to practice in South Dakota, and they felt that it was important that he prove that competence in the law by passing the bar exam. Chairman Wise did ask him about that, and there was a little lightness to him. Reed Rasmussen, a member of the bar examiners, asked the question. He certainly indicated they weren't trying to drum up business, but it was part of his background as having been a former board member, and also having looked at a number of cases in which this court has required people seeking readmission to take the bar exam.
But otherwise, there's no rule or standard either that we've promulgated or the disciplinary board abides by that requires taking and passing the bar exam as a condition to reinstatement after suspension or disbarment. That's sort of a case-by-case basis.
Yes, and that is part of, 16-1987 gives the court the latitude to do that. One of the other cases I read, there was a Husby case back in before the statute was changed.
Apparently they couldn't do it to Mr. Husby because he'd only been out for 3 years.
Right, and that obviously the statute was changed to include any attorney suspended 90 days or more, or more than 90 days. So, the board understands and believes that the bar examination would be a good test to make sure that the public is protected when Mr. Orrock, Dorock is given the privilege to practice law here again in South Dakota. They didn't inquire further, and I think Mr. Orrock has complied or has indicated his agreement with the rest of the recommendations from the board except that singular item. But the board did feel it was important. It's authorized under statute, and there's some history from this court of requiring applicants for readmission to take the bar exam. Again, he's been out about a little over 6 years now, he had not kept up by his own admission because he thought he wasn't going to be able to practice again. So he hadn't kept up with the current status of the law. That's an important thing that the bar examiner or the board felt the bar exam would help ensure that he was competent in all respects to practice law in South Dakota. The third prong is whether this would be detrimental to the integrity and standing of the bar, the administration of justice, or subversive to the public interest. The board understands, and Mr. Orrock acknowledged, that there's always going to be those who look disfavorably upon him because of his conduct. There's been a history of this court readmitting people who have conducted themselves in a felonious manner. There's a number of cases regarding reinstatement for people who have been involved in drugs or other misconduct that has resulted in their suspension or disbarment, that when they come back to the court and have shown remorse, have rehabilitated themselves, and by all aspects, Mr. Orrock has done well with those items. The board felt that he passed that qualification, that it would not be subversive to the public interest to permit him to practice under the terms and conditions of their recommendation. So we would ask the court to adopt the recommendation of the board. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Mr. Freeberg, did you have any involvement in those prior complaints that were filed against Mr. R?
No, that was before I was involved with the board, Your Honor.
So, with reference to the question regarding what type of precedence this sets, readmission cases are somewhat infrequent, you tell us, and my experience also, they've been somewhat infrequent. But I would expect that this, if readmission is granted, will set a precedent. How do you suggest that the court manage that on a case-by-case basis based on the rehabilitation of the applicant? Is that the board's approach?
I think it is the board's approach, Justice. You know, every case is very unique. Everybody's circumstance when they come before the board is quite unique. It's hard to categorize them to say they fall into this category or another. So I think it really has to be a case-by-case review of the total person and total applicant that comes back before this court.
So restitution has not been satisfied, but that doesn't change the recommendation of the board in light of the fact that there are ongoing payments to set.
I just want to clarify, the board was of the belief when they made their recommendation without addressing restitution that the sale of the business was imminent. In fact, I think Mr. Orr testified that but for his preparation for the hearing before the disciplinary board, the sale may have been completed and restitution paid. I think the board has not re-addressed that again as a result of the fact that he hasn't paid the restitution in full but has continued with the restitution plan that was ordered by Judge Viken.
Thank you, Mr. Freeberg.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Sword, any rebuttal?
We've heard the concerns with the prior complaints, and we're fully aware that we're not going to stretch our skill level out into other areas of the law. So the proposal was for a limitation on the criminal law, and the reason why we did that is because Mr. O'Rourke has an expertise in that. He was a state's attorney in probably one of the hardest counties in South Dakota, in Bennett County. He handled everything from your regular DUI all the way up to homicides. And so really, the one thing in limiting it to criminal law, you're really just in two chapters, criminal procedure and then the crimes, 22 and 23A. And so we're limiting it so we don't get out to any further complaints. We're getting out into his area expertise. And so when we talked about limiting and going into the 40 hours of the CLE, those CLEs I would anticipate would be related to the criminal law. At the end of the 2 years, I highly doubt that Mr. O'Rourke is going to go out into divorces ever again. So we're going to limit the practice to that, and then hopefully that would limit any kind of exposure that he would have to any other problems with the disciplinary board. Now, Mr. O'Rourke's competency to practice law, you have it before you. Mr. O'Rourke, I did very little on this case. Mr. O'Rourke was able to navigate brand new statutes, brand new to him, which was the disciplinary board and the readmission procedure. He's able to take several cases, synthesize them, and analyze them, and I think that his work product, both to the board and to this court, shows his competency to take complex legal issues and synthesize those. And so when we look at Mr. O'Rourke, he's going to be primarily focused in an area that is his specialty. His competency is his work product to you. As to my conversations with Mr. O'Rourke, his analysis of the legal issues have been sharp. His writing has been right on point. Now, they talk about Mr. O'Rourke, me supervising Mr. O'Rourke. I can tell you that that's probably true, but I welcome his input on my work product because I've seen the quality of his work product. And I know that Mr. O'Rourke being in my office will be a benefit to me. Now, I just want to finish, and maybe I should apologize. Maybe I apologize to Mr. Bob Freeburg. He asked me a question if I would be able to defend Mr. Orock if he worked with me, that I could defend having a convicted felon in my office. And when he asked me that, I was taken aback. And I apologize because I was a little flippant with the board. And I didn't mean to be, but it took me off guard. I practice in Fall River County, and that's where I started. And I'm one of the few attorneys left in South Dakota that practiced with Bob Mines, that actually had a jury trial with Bob Mines. And so when we're talking about the behavior to the board, I know what misbehavior is. And I can tell you that Mr. Orock has been a pillar these last 5 years of what it is to try and get readmission. Because I know the other end of the spectrum. I know what Bob Mines was. And I was there at the law school with Mr. Olson, Bert Olson, in 95. I was one of those young kids that was sitting in the seats that day when he told Justice Miller that he would smoke marijuana, that he would continue to smoke marijuana, that this is a man that had, as a state's attorney, had written immunity by state's attorney and signed his name, Bert Olson, to marijuana plants. And I never read that decision until this, because I just assumed that he was disbarred. And he wasn't disbarred. He was suspended and given a way back. Even with that disrespect, he was still given a way back. And with Mr. Orock, he's been a model. He's been what we would expect somebody to do to come back before you. And so, Your Honors, I would respectfully ask that you grant the relief Mr. Orock prays for. Thank you.
Question. Chief, please. Mr. Storm, before you sit down, thank you. I'm sorry.
Did you... No, go ahead. I do.
Following up a little bit on Justice Devaney's question, and I know that you have to sort of take things one at a time and not get too far ahead of yourself, and I can appreciate that. But if conditional admission is authorized, and within the condition of practicing within criminal law comes and goes, and at the end of 2 years, maybe it's difficult to visualize what that will look like, but you know, then we'd be at the point where we'd talk about unconditional, perhaps, if Mr. Orock is inclined in that way, obtaining unconditional admission. And so I hear what you're saying about the bar exam and whether it suits the needs now. Is there a longer range path in terms of how you envision this practice coming together where the practice might get broader and maybe a broader spectrum of competency or proficiency in the law might be required?
The natural transition from criminal law, civil litigation. So obviously the high-risk stuff, the divorces, is not an option. So you would just be looking at more of a litigation, which would be more of taking depositions and doing the civil practice, learning the rules of discovery, doing a lot of discovery, and then, of course, working to a trial or settling a case. So more of the low-risk stuff, and definitely nothing as high-risk as a divorce.
Thank you.
If I may, Chief.
Go ahead.
So Mr. Freeburg mentioned, or at least as I understood his comments, when the board made its recommendations, they appear to have been under the assumption that the restitution was all going to be made, and then presumably didn't make any requirements with respect to restitution because of that assumption. What's your client's position with respect to restitution and whether we should impose some additional requirements?
Thank you. So when we were in front of the board, we had a sale pending on the business. Through no fault of Mr. Orock, that sale fell through. One of the things that we did in front of the board is we proposed a restitution plan, and that would be in the board's submissions. But as part of that restitution plan, part of it would be based upon his income that he would earn. And so right now he pays $1,000 and he has income from a military disability and then also he has a transportation business. But if he was to start practicing law, he would dedicate, and I think it was like 25% of his income from the practice of law, to pay off that restitution, because he definitely understands, and one of the questions, many of the questions to the board was how we're going to pay that off. And so he understands that. And one of the reasons why we had proposed the payment plan is so that it would be painful. He has to speed up the payments to get this done. From my own perspective, in my office, I need that paid off. And so he would dedicate his income, a bigger percentage of his income, to pay that off, more than the $1,000 that he already pays.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel, and thank you, Mr. Orr, for coming in today. I recognize in disciplinary matters, it's not easy for you to come in front of the court, have the curtain of your life pulled back, and